The spirit of performance defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Live from the Nasdaq Market Site in the heart of New York City's Times Square, this is Fast Money. Here's what's on tap tonight. NVIDIA in focus, the surging semi holding a must-see AI developers conference next week, featuring a two-hour keynote from CEO Jensen Huang. What you should be watching from this event and what it could mean for the red-hot chip stock. Plus, on the cutting edge, next week's Fed meeting could give some big clues as to when the central bank will finally start bringing down rates, what the traders are keyed in on, and how it could impact the markets. And later, a new reality for realtors. A landmark ruling on broker commission sending shares of Zillow and other home buying sites plunging today. Is this an opportunity to get in on these names? And what could it mean for the housing market? I'm Melissa Lee, coming to you live from Studio B at the Nasdaq. On the desk tonight, Tim Seymour, Bono and Eisen, Steve Grasso, and Julie Beal. We start off with a countdown to two potentially market-moving events next week, NVIDIA's hotly anticipated GTC conference and a Fed meeting that could lay the groundwork for rate cuts this year. We begin, though, with NVIDIA, the chip standouts AI developers event getting underway on Monday. Expectations on the street are high, with investors watching for new product launches, including a possible GPU for the Chinese market and other updates that could sustain the stock's massive run. NVIDIA shares having a bumpy ride this week, posting a small loss today, but up slightly since Monday. For more on what to expect from the event, let's get to Christina Partsinevelis. Christina.
They're calling it what? The Woodstock of AI, the AI Palooza, godfather of AI is going to take the stage. This is the first in-person GTC event in 5 years with over 16,000 attendees that are flying in for 2 days. Every hotel in the city is sold out for miles. Trust me, I can attest to that. But you talked about the shares. They've been up, what, 80% in the last 3 months alone. The stock has moved over 2%, 8 out of the 10 last trading sessions. Even without any news as a catalyst. So one has to wonder how much is already priced into this stock and what more can the company and the CEO say over 2 hours to excite investors? Well, there's three themes that could do just that. The product roadmap for their new Blackwell AI chip. How good is the memory for that chip? Will it outperform AMD? When will it actually be launched? And is it really 30% higher than previous chips like the H100? So could that mean a price target of $40,000 for these chips? Secondly, how AI adoption is growing at the enterprise level. It's been slow, with most of the demand coming from hyperscalers. We talk about the CapEx spending from Meta, Google, Amazon. But NVIDIA's CEO said that enterprise demand is still at the very early innings. So expect Jensen Huang to hype up demand from other sectors, finance, healthcare. The list continues. And then lastly, you have inferencing, which helps spit out answers to questions on trained large language models. The question is, will that drive future demand, since it already accounts for 40% of data center revenue? Will there be an update to the total addressable market as well? Lastly, we're expecting some collaborations, partnerships with Micron, Broadcom, Oracle, TSMC. So expect the Midas touch of NVIDIA on Monday across the chip space.
Christina, is the Blackwell the successor to the H100?
So there's H100, H200. Mm-hmm. The Blackwell, yes, is the next step up in the architecture of the GPU, the graphic processing unit. So that's why there's so much focus on this chip, because it's expected to be much more powerful, have much stronger memory, and that's where that collaboration with Micron may come about. The problem is the price point is going to be a lot higher, and then the power usage will be higher as well. So we're going to be looking for those specs, because that could dictate what happens to AMD stock as well.
Right. Christina, thanks. Christina Partsinevelis on NVIDIA. A lot's riding on this one. in many ways.
Well, for a stock when the rest of its peers in the semiconductors have started to pull back, I mean, NVIDIA's, 3.5% off its all-time high, at least the closing high, where the semis are off, around 8. But the question is, what's priced in here? I think it is an exciting moment. It's absolutely both the keynote and the dynamics around NVIDIA really showing off their full platform stack and that whole dynamic of accelerated compute across a number of really different, kind of key industries, whether it's Omniverse, whether it's auto. I mean, all the obvious stuff. And then the AI Foundry data center and places where I think people believe this is where you're really going to hear them focus and possibly show how much farther ahead they are than some of the competition. That's what this comes down to at a time when we've priced in a ton of good news. We know the addressable market, or maybe we don't. But I think it almost does feel like the market needs to see something special.
Yeah, it's a prove me story at this point with the valuation so high.
I think there's argument around the valuation much higher, but there's pockets of the market that are still much higher. And you know that I'm definitely a proponent of NVIDIA. I don't question the target addressable market. I don't question the full stack. What I do question is how much of the news has already been priced in. And I do think probably are a little bit asymmetrically pivoted to the downside here if they don't deliver. But I do not put it past Jensen Huang to be able to get out here and sell the gospel of NVIDIA and talk about how much further ahead they are and what all the use cases are. So I just think it's going to be a prove me story. And likely if you are waiting to get in, and this falters a little bit, it probably will give you an opportunity to get in lower.
John Fortin, the Overtime Show, was talking about how there could be an interesting cameo, which could also stir up the excitement around NVIDIA once again.
What's the cameo? I'm sorry.
A cameo appearance. It could be like some rock star CEO.
Oh, wow.
It could be like some,
I think you were leaving me hanging there. I thought you were going to tell me who it was.
I don't know. If I knew, I mean.
Right, you would have told me. Then it wouldn't have been a cliffhanger. So, there is a case to be made when you go to EV to sales that it's actually cheaper than it was before it had any sales. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if valuation is stretched now or if you think that maybe it could grow into it or it's already expanded to the point where there's a lot more room to the upside for NVIDIA. I saw that this thing, depending on how you look at it, the stock could double and still be cheap on price because sales are increasing at the same, or I should say at a dramatic, exponentially faster pace. So there's a way to move around
that.
If you believe it, but I think Christina touched on it, the collaboration, Hewlett-Packard, Oracle, Micron, I think those stocks probably will have the ability to move more so than NVIDIA next week, and that's what I'm interested in watching.
A lot of the analysts that I've talked to leading up to this event, Julie, have said that they will focus on also selling NVIDIA as a stock, not just a hardware company, but also one that provides services, that software, that creates an ecosystem. So there's a recurring revenue component to this whole thing, not just, the concern about double ordering because it's only a hardware company at this point.
Yeah, I think it's really critical when you look at software businesses versus hardware businesses. Software businesses typically have recurring revenue and they don't have this high level of fixed costs. If you look at NVIDIA's margins, right, their operating margin has doubled, in the last 5 years. And so you have to think that there's enough capacity being built right now for them in order to continue to double their business. If that revenue materially decelerates, it has a profound impact on their profitability, the way a software business just doesn't have that kind of volatility. And so I think that's the one kind of bear case is you have this high level of fixed cost absorption that you have to have in order to justify this valuation. And I think as long as demand holds in, it's no problem. My concern is the demand is still pretty consolidated among their customer base, right, who can afford this chip. The more that they can broaden out their base of customers, the better and safer their businesses over the long term. So the partnerships are key.
If it's sell the news, whatever the news may be, Tim, do we lose the market on Monday?
Well, this could bring us into our market conversation because I think the market has some interesting cross currents that we got out of this week. Rates were higher. We had the worst week for bonds all year. We have a Fed. We have dynamics around inflation. It was much stickier this week. But back to NVIDIA, I think it's very important. Having said that, you can make an argument and look across the Nasdaq. Nasdaq has sputtered for a month. Nasdaq has really done almost nothing in a month, of which semis are a major part of that. You can see where the broadening of the market has happened at a time when I don't know if semis have peaked for this short term. I continue to believe that until they stop making relative highs against the S&P and even of the NASDAQ, that I think the market is going to go higher. But they are not solely responsible for the breadth in the market here. So the question is, how many rabbits can NVIDIA continue to pull out of the hat? And if you think about what they've already given the market at different times, and this is, you know, so this is not an earnings release. This is truly kind of a state of the union. We just had a state of the union. But their development cycle may be faster than people think. Think this is a company that's been so far ahead of everybody. If you think there might be nothing tomorrow, there might on Monday, there might be something. And again, as Christina pointed out, there's some incremental progress on the 200 chip, some of the other dynamics. I think they're going to give the market something. Yeah. It's just a question of what the market really wants to do with this. But I don't think we need NVIDIA right now the way we might have felt like we needed them a month ago.
I think you need Microsoft. I think we've seen this week where Microsoft sort of staved off a lot of the sell pressure on the Qs. And NVIDIA is only about 6% of the Qs. Not that Microsoft is that much more, but it's 9% of the Qs, but it's a lot of how you think about the overall market. Microsoft seems like a steady Eddie. If the market lost Microsoft for any extent a period of time, then I think the market's in trouble. I'd rather hold Microsoft and have NVIDIA be a little volatile than the other way around.
All right, well, let's get the technical take on where NVIDIA shares could go from here with the chart master. Carter Braxton-Worth of Worth Charting joins us. Carter, what do you see for NVIDIA?
Sure, we'll get right to it. But before the charts, I mean, you're talking about how much NVIDIA will affect the market next week. It's important to point out that NVIDIA has been down 5 out of the past 6 sessions. S&P, identical. 5 of the past 6 sessions and the same sessions. QQQ also. Which is to say, I think NVIDIA obviously has a lot to do with what the market's going to do on a day-to-day basis coming ahead. Anyway, let's go right to the charts. There are 3 long-term charts, and they're identical, and then one will wrap up with its short-term. So this is the period in which effectively the stock went from 10 to 1,000. And now let's put some lines in. We have a well-defined internal trend line. Literally, we have come up against this line for the 4th or 5th time. Just to sort of annotate that further, let's put some arrows in, and you'll see that we are touching this line. Last week, we touched it to the penny, and that's where we got that massive back-off, that outside reversal day. And so the question is it a big move to a difficult level? I think that's the case. Let's zero in, final chart, and this would be sort of the here and now chart. It's that textbook breakout. The stock made no progress, essentially trading at 500 for 6 months. And then the beginning of the year, it broke out from a well-defined formation, and it doubled, effectively, going to 1,000. And I think you have price discovery here, whatever might be coming in the conference next week or whatever it is. Can you have price discovery 2 years out or 10 years out? Of course not. No one can discount that. But has the doubling year-to-date discounted what lies ahead the next week or weeks ahead, month or two? I think yes.
All right. Carter, thank you. Carter Braxton-Worth. And we'll see you a bit later on in the hour. Meantime, what's your reaction? Do you think that we've seen the best of it for the next month or so?
I think you'll probably reach a period where there is some consolidation here. I just don't see what, not that there's anything questioning the story, but in the time frame that we're speaking of, right? I don't expect that to continue for the next week or couple of weeks.
And we should mention that Jim Cramer is going to be sitting down for an exclusive interview with NVIDIA CEO Jensen Huang live from the GTC conference next week. You can catch the first part live at 10:15 a.m. Eastern time on Tuesday, and with more on Mad Money at 6 o'clock, only right here on CNBC. Now let's get to next week's other big event, the Fed decision. Markets keen to see how the central bank will digest this week's hotter-than-expected inflation reports. The major indices all down today and for the week. The S&P and NASDAQ both notching 2 straight weeks of losses for the first time since late October, while the Dow was down 3 weeks in a row. 10-year yield, meantime, hitting a more than 2-week high today. So what should investors expect from the Fed? Julie, do you think that we are going to set up for a June cut, or do you think the Fed sort of moves that out?
I think they're going to kind of continue to be posturing pretty vague because the data is a little bit mixed right now. Obviously, you know, the prints were a little bit hotter for PPI and CPI than we would like. And it feels like it's a little bit what they had warned about, which was, you know, we would make a lot of progress going from 9-10% down to 3%. But kind of that last percent seems to be pretty stubborn. We're getting it on goods deflation, but it's really in the services sector that we continue to struggle to see any real progress. And so I think that they want the flexibility to be able to stand pat here and stand pat for the early part of the summer. You know, I think, you know, we look at June, June starts to look different. I know people are talking about September rate cuts, but I think they're going to be limited how much they can really do politically as far as rate cuts right before an election cycle.
What do you think, Tim? Are you looking still to June?
Yeah, I think I am, although we've obviously given ground on that. And if you look at where, you know, we've seen a couple of Wall Street houses, even in the last couple of days, have to cut them into three cuts when they're at four or five. And so this is just a function of the calendar at this point. It's starting to compress. There's less time left in the year. PPI, as Julie pointed out, CPI, there's different parts of it, but owner's equivalent rent, services, dynamics. And then on the PPI side, energy's not making it easy. And some of the dynamics, I think, with, you know, if we're calling maybe some part of this, and retail sales was a little disappointing this week, there are people out there, Michael Hartnett at Bank of America, who I have a ton of respect for, starting to use that stagflation term. If we've got stagflation, even a little bit of it, you're going to continue to see the parts of the market that would respond to that. That would obviously be gold and Bitcoin, but I think it would also be energy and healthcare. And I think there are parts of the market that actually have started to break out, have started to outperform, and are going to continue to perform despite what the Fed says. Julie's right. There's not a whole lot they can give us right now, and they're going to hang in longer than they can. It's not until we start to see restrictive policy again. That's when rates are higher than the rate of inflation. So, but by, you know, by default, it is restrictive right now, and we won't know until we know, and that means it's already happened. So right now, I think the Fed this week coming is kind of a non-event. Futures markets have done a lot of the work for them.
I think that's where Tim just left off. I think if you find that the data really starts to slip off the table, the Fed has waited too long. So they don't want to run into us. So I think what everyone is waiting for is to really see something that say they have to cut now. And you're not going to see that. He's going to cut, hopefully, before that time period happens. So if you look at next week, I think he's going to tweak QT. Then I think he's going to cut before June because of the same thing that Julie said.
He's going to cut. So it's going to be an intra meeting cut.
I think they're going to cut rates prior to June. I think now you're going to see them tweak. You're going to the next meeting. He's going to tweak QT. And then the next round of meetings, he's going to cut before June. That's what I believe. And that for the reason why Julie said you purposely want to stay away from the election. So I think he went out of his way to say that we don't really need to see things fall off a cliff. We just need to see things moving in the general same direction. And I don't think CPI or PPI, I don't think they really discontinued the same general movement.
So you've become more dovish on the Fed. I don't mean relative to what position you had, but your point is that you're significantly more dovish than where the market is.
I've always been significantly more dovish, and I haven't really seen anything to change my mind. As a matter of fact, I'm more convinced on Powell's own words the last time that he was at those meetings. I was at the post-Fed interview, because when you think about what he said, he just said, we don't need to see something drastically improve, just the same general direction. It seems like he's setting it up so that he has more latitude.
I agree that he's setting it up so that he has more latitude. I tend to agree a bit more with Julie here. I hear both of you in terms of the political posturing and not wanting to seem like that is going to be a catalyst for a move one way or the other. But I think kind of accelerating the timeline still gives you that same problem where you're just trying to get the rate cuts out in front of the election cycle. I think if anything that would lead me to kind of lean towards you is the retail sales number, because if we don't see anything there, you know, but you haven't seen that follow through in wages, and you haven't seen that follow through in terms of employment. So I still think that PPI and CPI number gives you a little bit more latitude to say, let's wait and make sure that there is follow through before it's pivoting. We have given ground, and perhaps now we're reaching more of a place of equilibrium, because we've moved from literally March being all but a given out to now June being called into question.
I don't know that June is a given. So
June is not a given.
Just to be clear, I'm not saying before June. I'm saying if anything, we could actually miss June. There's only a handful of inflation points, data points, until we get to that June meeting based upon where the Fed's meetings are scheduled. So I they're not going to rush in too soon. If anything, they're going to rush in too late, and it's always a problem. But that's what we're going to get this time. Not too soon, I think.
Coming up, Japanese stocks on a tear, but a big shakeup could be brewing ahead of next week's pivotal central bank meeting. What it all means for the world's fourth largest economy, plus Bitcoin may be off its record highs, but the recent rally could be having some surprising effects on an unexpected sector. The impact the crypto is having on the nation's electricity grid. That's coming up.
This is Fast Money with Melissa Lee, right here on CNBC.
What does it mean to be rich? Maybe it's less about reaching a magic number and more about discovering the magic in life. At Edward Jones, our dedicated financial advisors are the people you can count on for financial strategies that help support a life you love. Because the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Learn more about our comprehensive approach to planning at edwardjones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Japan's largest trade union saying workers in the country are set to receive their largest wage hike in 33 years. The union saying its 7 million members are expected to get an average increase of 5.28%, much higher than expected. The news comes ahead of a key Bank of Japan meeting next week, where investors are watching whether the central bank will raise rates for the first time since 2007 and shift away from its negative interest rate policy, also giving up yield curve control. What do you think, Tim? This is sort of widely speculated around this wage hike.
It is. I think this, first of all, these wage numbers came in a lot hotter.
Yeah.
And I think they might wait until the April meeting. This is interesting. We're having conversations like this in the U.S. They're having these conversations in Japan. The first move is to actually get rates back to even instead of negative. I think the second will be we're going to formally stop YCC or yield curve control. And then finally, I think they're going to have to communicate something in terms of what they're doing on buying of JGBs. This, to me, doesn't change the story of investing in Japan, where, you know, I'm overweight, iDevo's overweight. There's different places where I think you can get your exposure. It's possible. And look, the yen will appreciate on the back of this. But think about these wage numbers. Think about consumption in Japan. Think about what a little inflation in Japan actually means at a time when there's also been significant corporate reform, pressure on the companies to pay out. I think the Japanese corporate sector, from a corporate governance perspective, really hasn't looked this good in decades. And I think you stay long.
It's amazing. It's been 8 years of negative interest rate policy in Japan.
Crazy. So that's why, you know, it's kind of like our Fed. Like they're not going to rush right. I don't think they can rush right in.
Yeah. Another part of this, though, is that you mentioned whether they buy JGBs, whether they continue also buying ETFs and other risky assets, Julian. I think that's sort of an interesting component of it as well.
A lot of it, I think, really depends on their ability to drive better personal consumption internally. You're starting to see that, and the wage gains are really meaningful. You have these large multinational businesses in Japan that are benefiting from a very soft yen and able to do extremely well, and they're passing on wage increases, 14%, I heard, 7%. That's very, very meaningful to the consumer confidence in that market and their ability to improve personal consumption. So it feels like it has the potential, at least, for a virtuous cycle. A lot of it depends, though, on what happens with the yen.
Yeah, I mean, I think this definitely it's positive for the catalyst or thesis around investing in Japan. As you know, DIGS, that's part of my acronym for this year. And I think this continues to kind of push that follow through there. Julie mentioned the consumption. I really think that the wage growth needs to translate there in order for us to really see that there's a justification for us leaving the stimulus and that there will be a natural background for that.
Can we refresh DIGS?
I mean, why? What do you mean refresh?
You want Digi?
Yes.
You want Digi?
Well, you know.
Digi Digs. You're not digging my Digi?
Do you mean refresh it? You want to know what it stands for?
Yeah, a little bit of everything. Look, we've had a lot of fun with acronyms over the last couple of days. And no, Digs is cool.
Why should it be Digi, though?
No, he's asking what it actually stood for. It's a little bit of
I was truly looking for a refresh course on what Diggs was all about.
Spoken
I mean, you know, we went through Guy's clam last night, so I mean, why not?
We touch clam all the time.
Yeah, we sure do.
You're
going to want to pull that one back.
What do you make of this trade now?
So if you look at it, you know, Tim touched on what it does for the currency, and in large portion, their market has been helped by their currency not appreciating. So you would think just at face value, unless they do what you said, unless there's ETFs involved and there's a whole an array of things that they'll do around this rate hike. But you're still talking about drastically low rates in Japan. It's been waited forever. So the people are angry that the wages were not increased. But I could see this as being a top point for the market near term, because obviously if the yen appreciates, it's going to hurt exports, which will hurt eventually the market.
How does that impact that? You know, it's funny. It's the biggest increase, wage hike increase in 33 years.
Yep.
Stock market is at a 33-year high as well.
Yeah, no, Steve's right. I mean, well, to the extent a stronger yen, Japan is also, it's a consumption economy, but look, at the heydays of Japan, they were an export economy. I mean, they were China before China was China. And so I do think a stronger yen, and the yen's been artificially absurdly weak. I mean, we've seen, you know, in terms of quant terms, like three standard deviation move here in the yen. It needs to come back in. The market's had such a great rally. But I think the fundamentals of this market are really strong. And I think the consumption dynamics, in addition to EPS and whatnot, are things to own.
There's a lot more fast money to come. Here's what's coming up next.
Electric trades from EVs to Bitcoin. The nation's energy infrastructure is under high demand. We'll shed some light on how to trade the sectors that could be most impacted. Plus, a double dose of options action. The Chartmaster and the Professor lay out ways to play two big earnings reports next week. How you can be primed for profits, no matter which way results go. You're watching Fast Money, live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. We're back right after this.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Demand for electricity on the rise for the first time in decades, and the reasons might surprise you. The New York Times reporting that a surge in Bitcoin mining and, ironically, the demand from the battery and solar factories central to the clean energy movement are racking up electricity use across the country and could ultimately threaten U.S. climate goals. Steve, you flagged the story. What does this mean in terms of, I mean,
yeah, I think we've all talked about it, right? That when you set these guidelines, and I get it, an administration has to sort of whiteboard and throw numbers out there. But when you say that you're going to be off the ICE internal combustion engine, when you say that you're going to be off of that by 2030 or 2035 or whatever the number is, you throw it out there and you expect everyone to kind of follow suit. And the problem is people start following suit. So Ford and GM started stumbling over themselves. So you wind up creating these unintended consequences where the infrastructure, the grid, is not ready and prepared for the strains that we put on it. So you have to really sort of wait till things catch up. The only solution now, there's got to be an all of the above. There's got to be nat gas. It's got to be fossil fuels. It's got to be coal. It's got to be everything. And the truth thing is, the only thing that's really carbon neutral is nuclear. And nuclear, when somebody says that, you say, not in my backyard. I don't want to build another plant. It takes 6 to 8 years to build another plant.
Well, I mean, that's the problem. I mean, if they really want to go ahead and build a lot of plants very quickly, it's not going to be alternative energy plants, for sure. I mean, those take much longer in terms of permitting, in terms of the supply chain, et cetera. They're going to be building gas plants. I mean, what is
fossil,
it mean for utilities? You're in that trade.
I am. And I think fossil-fueled electricity utilities are also going to be a big part of coming up with that energy demand that's growing you know, around 5 to 6% a year. And based upon EV and based upon other dynamics and frankly, also just the need to upgrade the grid, I think all this says you want to buy integrated miners. I think the copper demand, we've talked about that. All this says more demand on copper. But whether it's coke and coal, whether it's other things that become places where electric utilities are able to, you know, coal-fired electricity generation is increasing. It's not what we want. And there's certain parts of the world where it happens. So, I think the trade ultimately out of this is, I love nuclear. I'm very long that sector. I have been for a long time. And that is one of those things. It doesn't happen overnight, nor did it seem like the trade would, although at points in this year and in the last 3 to 6 months, we've gotten headlines coming out of nuclear that are very, very impressive.
Yeah. Julie, where's your trade here?
Yeah, my favorite trade is, you know, a million years ago, I used to work for the municipality of Los Angeles, and I worked a lot with the utility here. And you would be shocked how much the municipal grid is really held together with Band-Aids. Literally, it is so underinvested in. And a lot of policymakers really wanted a feed-in tariff in Los Angeles. And we had German specialists who had done their own feed-in tariff come in and tell us, absolutely do not do this. It will break your grid like you will not believe. So that's the problem, is when you have policy that doesn't actually get informed by the practicality of it. Company I like is Aspen Technologies. They have great grid optimization software that I think is going to be really successful. That's AZPN.
Yeah, I think Constellation Energy has actually been another strong performer within the sector. But to Steve's point, I think what you're going to see is an expansion. Another maybe dark horse is Nat Gas. It's been an awful performer. It's been a laggard across a commodity complex. This might actually be the type of catalyst that it needs to get some foothold.
Coming up, a double dose of options action. The Chartmaster and Professor Co take on two of next week's biggest earnings reports, the setups and how to play the names next, plus a major buzzkill for Zillow and Redfin after a blockbuster decision that could change the home buying market as we know it. We'll tackle the fallout right after this.
Missed a moment of Fast? Catch us anytime on the go. Follow the Fast Money Podcast. We're back right after this.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Earnings season is winding down, but a handful of names reporting next week still caught our eyes. Let's lay out what we can expect from Nike with the OG Options Action crew. Carter Worth is back to lay out the key levels, and Mike Coe has a trade. So let's get to Nike now. Carter, what do you see there in the charts?
Yeah, sure. Let's just pull up one chart. I mean, this doesn't act well, is the old-time technical expression. The last quarterly report, stock dropped 12%. You see that gap there? And we're threatening here to breach the lower band of these converging trend lines. I don't like it. I'm a seller.
All right. That's straightforward. Mike, what's a trade off of that?
Yeah, I mean, look, Nike is trading at a slight discount to its historical valuation. But, you know, they had given us a pretty grim looking picture back in December. And that was confirmed, I think, by Foot Locker's results. So 23 and a half times earning is fine if the company's growing. But the expectation is that they're actually not going to on the top line. So I think actually the way to play this, considering the fact the stock is already down over 8% year to date, and you're sort of pressing that bearish bet, is just to use a short dated put spread. The 98.90 put spread, which expires at the end of this coming week, would be one way to make that bearish play by only risking a small percentage of the current stock price. That's going to cost you a little less than $2.40 a share to put that trade on.
All right, let's move on to FedEx. It's also reporting on Thursday. So Carter, what do you see in the charts?
Sure. So almost an identical reaction to its earnings results last quarter. And you can see the drop in gap in the chart, exactly what Nike did. And so we have another circumstance where stocks exhibiting bearish price volume correlation and very poor relative strength to the market. For me, more of a pair of twos, less clear. But again, if one has to be directional, I'm a seller.
Well, that's more optimistic than I don't like it, sell it. Mike, what's the trade?
Yeah, I mean, this is an interesting situation, right? Because we have sort of a bad backdrop for them fundamentally. But then on the other side, trading 14 and a half times earnings, you kind of figure that it's some people, bargain hunters, are going to kind of step in. I would caution them against doing that. You know, we are looking at a nearly 7% implied move in the stock. And I think the way you want to play this is actually with a calendar spread. I was looking at the March 28th weekly May 250 calendar put spread. You're buying that longer dated put financed by selling that shorter dated one. And quite surprisingly, the short dated put covers the bulk of that longer dated put purchase. And so you actually will see profits if it just stays within this range. And then, of course, if the news turns out to be somewhat negative thereafter, you get to own that longer dated put at quite a discount.
All right. Tim, you've trafficked in both names. What do you?
Yeah, I'll talk about Nike for all its best in class. This is for Carter and Mike. You know, the stock's done nothing since pre-COVID. Having said that, it's had a couple very big runs. The read through from Foot Locker a few weeks ago is very interesting. They're still 60% of Foot Locker sales, highly promotional, may give you some sense of the Nike margin. I think between U.S. China kind of dynamics, I think also the wholesale channel is still something to be a little bit worried about with Nike, even though the secular trends in health and wellness and even in innovation in sneakers, I like it long term, but I don't love it here.
Which trade do you like?
So I'll follow through on Nike. So I like the Nike trade. I'm going to cover it from the option standpoint. I just think that if you're going to press a short, and it has had a pretty precipitous fall, you want to do it through options versus running the risk of having to go cover.
Yep. Where do you stand?
Could you imagine if we asked Carter what he thought of Under Armour's chart? Because that would be a horrendous result.
We,
on
we
that
actually
one.
Can. Yeah, I mean,
but look at how many boxes are up there. Is this a record?
Like the Brady Bunch.
No, there's been eight in the past on CNBC.
We boxed up more than that. Yeah.
Carter, yeah. what do you think of Under Armour's chart?
One of the first rules, if you can use it, is just if it's in a downtrend, generally be cautious. If it's in an uptrend, generally be optimistic. Under Armour, talk about not performing well. The burden of proof is on the bull. The bear just has to point to, look at the mess we've got.
Carter has such a nice way of making a question sound absolutely stupid.
Sounds like
ask.
A pair of twos.
Julie, do you think FedEx is in any way, shape, or form a bargain?
No, I think a lot of the dynamics around them, there's so much uncertainty that you have to be willing to take on, whether it's, you know, what's going on with their postal service contract, their pilots union. It's just, to me, it's one of those really messy cases that you knew in college and that you'd really rather not be friends with.
All right. Carter and Mike, nice to get the band back together sometimes, right? Thank you.
Yeah.
Carter Braxtonworth and Mike Coe. All right, coming up, a real estate reality check, a key ruling sending property stocks like Zillow, Redfin, and Compass Realty dropping in today's session. The trades straight ahead. And later, DraftKings is courting new bettors as March Madness kicks off. We'll dive into the surge in female fan engagement, which games are getting the most attention. More Fast Money right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. We've got a market flash on HashiCorp shares jumping in the after hours. Julia Borson joins us now with some details. Julia.
Yes, after a company, HashiCorp, is said to weigh a potential sale, those shares are up about 11.5% on this report. Now, before this after hours move, the stock was up 12% year to date. It was about flat over the past 12 months, but we see it really popping higher in after hours on that Bloomberg report. Back over to you.
All right, Julia, thanks. Julia Borson. Meantime, a landmark settlement by the National Association of Realtors sending shares of Zillow, Redfin, and Compass Group falling sharply today. The trade group agreeing to eliminate the standard broker commission charged to home sellers, often as much as 6%, and to pay $418 million over the next 4 years to end litigation. The deal, if approved, could significantly reduce costs to buy and sell a home. Great for the parties involved in terms of the home, but not good for these guys. What do you think?
Yeah, I think when you're in a Zillow situation, you're a very asset-light model at this point. You're a high-margin business, and I think this hurts you a lot less. You can make an argument that the operational leverage in the business is taking a huge hit here. Let's see how the industry responds. The White House is throwing everything they can. There's all types of ways to try to stimulate the housing market. I kind of like Zillow here, frankly. I don't think you need to chase it here. Valuation, not terrible. And again, they've gotten through that painful asset-heavy part of their business.
This is enough to stimulate the market?
I don't know if it's enough to stimulate the market, but I would assume that it stabilizes the home values, because wherever that money comes from winds up going back to the other side of the equation. I think that 6% is, without getting provocative, I think that it was probably an egregious amount of money. So, you know, it depends
what you're going to actually say.
Yeah, I mean, well think about
not
it.
Not to get provocative.
If we go back,
provocative can mean a lot of things, not just high commissions.
Yeah, so. I mean, if we go back, remember the guys that were running around the floor? I was one of them on the floor. The amount of commissions that we used to charge was an exorbitant amount of money, and the market and electronics and technology catches up with it. So I think it's just catching up with the market.
Steve said he was overpaid back early in his career.
Yeah, overpaid.
Probably overpaid. Paid
on
now.
The floor. Wow. All right. Coming up, Fox Sox catching fire today. The headlines that have these names lighting up right after this break. Doug Goiner, Fast Money's back in two. Welcome back to Fast Money. March Madness kicks off this weekend with Selection Sunday, and sports betting companies are prepping for one of the busiest parts of their season. This year, women's college basketball is drawing particular interest. What is behind this trend, and who is behind the betting? Let's get to CNBC's Contessa Brewer for the details. Contessa.
Betting Brewer, that's me. March Madness, Melissa, kicks off this weekend with Selection Sunday, and women's college basketball, like women's sports more broadly, is surging in fan engagement and viewership and sports betting. DraftKings told us the amount wagered or handle on women's sports has roughly quadrupled in the last 3 years. Even though women gamble in casinos and online in roughly the same percentages as men, when it comes to wagering on sports, American men far outnumber the women by 95%, according to a 2023 Eilers and Krejcik research report. The American Gaming Association says that number's grown. It estimates 26% of U.S. sports bettors are women. Penn Entertainment, of course, spent billions ditching that Barstool brand with its bad boy locker room humor and relaunching as ESPN Bet. And in fewer than 2 months, Penn boasted 35% more women in its digital database than in the same time period the previous year. BetMGM says this year a 51% increase in the number of female bettors wagering on the Super Bowl. And why do you think that is, Melissa?
Why?
There was a Super Bowl romance story, and it drove female engagement. But here's the thing. Just because they try it doesn't mean they'll stay. So it's up to the apps and the sports books to create a product that women like.
That research report, the 2023 research report that you cited, do they have any information on whether or not women were better bettors
than men? Because women, as you know, tend to be thought of as being less risk averse and more careful with their, say, investments. We've seen similarities there where it says that women say they're more comfortable with investing when they have more knowledge. And in fact, we just saw a recent research report that showed something like 20% of women said, yeah, I know what I'm doing. And the rest said, maybe not so much. So that's another key is how do you educate more women investors and women bettors about the product so that they feel confident?
I thought maybe women might win more money because they don't make dumb bets.
What if I had said that, Steve?
Women make dumb bets?
I'm not going to go near that.
Contessa, thank you.
Sure.
Contessa Betting Brewer. Julie Beal, are you going to wager on anything this season? College.
No, I mean, I don't know if I agree with her that it is up to the sports books to make the experience a positive one. And I agree, you know, it's the studies have shown that women are better investors because they're better at cutting their losses and typically they're better at holding their winners. So super sorry about that, guys.
I'm betting on Caitlin Clark. You're really Caitlin Clark. I mean, she's amazing. Bet on her.
Sure.
Come on. You were saying that. You said it to me.
Meantime, cannabis stocks on fire today amid hope the Drug Enforcement Administration may soon reschedule marijuana as a less dangerous drug. Stocks jumping even higher this afternoon after Vice President Kamala Harris urged the DEA to work quickly to review the drug's classification. So, Tim, Pot King, we got to go to you on this.
Yeah, as quickly as possible, she said. And so within the cannabis community, this is the whole point, that the Biden administration has the ability to control every step of this process. This does not require legislative dynamics. So what this means in terms of profitability, we've said this, the punitive taxation about being scheduled as a drug similar to heroin. It's absurd. Those are her words, by the way. It's interesting to note also that, you know, at a time when we've seen, I'm not comparing the two industries, but think about the influx into crypto and into you know, what you've seen with Bitcoin. If you get the institutional world able to invest in cannabis, I think it's a game changer. There's a whole wall of capital. This is still a retail market. This would change a lot of it. Doesn't change the legality, but it would certainly allow, I think, a lot more of these companies to have the type of influx that I think it would. And the companies that are trading on the TSX, Curaleaf outperformed today, TerrAscend, you know, those companies that are actually in places where institutions trade more actually did better today. So it's just something to think about with what we've seen going on with crypto assets. But this is, I think we're relatively close here. We've had so many head fakes in cannabis. But again, if the administration wants this to happen, Biden appointed the DEA. I mean, if he's urging this, I think it happens.
It is an election year. It's always an election, hot button topic.
Yeah, the problem, though, to Tim's point, I agree with almost all of it. The problem is the black market, where it's the illicit drug market that's pulling people away. Because if you're not going to prosecute for crimes where it's individuals that are smoking pot, then there's no reason. I mean, we're in Times Square. I get off the S train, you smell it. And it's not coming from any store. So that's the problem they need to really crack down on to make these stocks actually flourish more.
Because you have the black market is the biggest competition. They said that also about sports betting.
We call it the illicit market.
The illicit,
market. But they said that about sports betting, too. And that business is doing, that industry.
Steve's right. Look, look at New York City. They've got to get their act together. And over the last couple of days, there's been a lot here. I do think the illicit market's a big deal.
Up next, final trades. Final trade, Julie.
I mentioned it before, Aspen AZPN for its grid technology.
Tim.
Rio, Integrated Miners. We had this whole chat. Stay there.
Bono in.
SPY puts. I think a tick up in rate volatility will lead to a tick up in equity volatility.
Steve.
Walmart owned it into the split. I own it now. I think it's got a decent amount of upside.
Thanks for watching Fast. Have a great weekend. Mad Money with Jim Cramer starts right now.
All opinions expressed by the Fast Money participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Fast Money participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Fast Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Fast Money Disclaimer.
From pit lane to podium, the Las Vegas Grand Prix is providing fans a race day experience at the speed they deserve. With the help of T-Mobile for Business, our 5G advanced network solutions are powering race day operations with event-wide connectivity. From streamlined gate entry to an immersive app, giving fans blazing fast access to the sport they love. This is accelerating innovation. This is the Las Vegas Grand Prix with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.